Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Everyone learns a language for different reasons. Maybe you want to watch K-dramas without subtitles or talk with family members in their native language. Your life is unique. Your language learning should be too. Rosetta Stone, the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years, just launched Rosetta Stone Sapphire, a new app that combines its proven immersion method with the latest innovation in technology to help you learn faster, personalize your lessons, and have more fun along the way. Most language apps teach the same generic topics. Sapphire helps you focus on what you actually want to talk about, whether that's travel, family, work, or your favorite hobbies. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. You'll get unlimited access to all 25 Rosetta Stone languages plus all the new Sapphire learning tools. Visit rosettastone.com/audio to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/audio and start learning a language for real.
Hey y'all, Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze.
Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
Basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Sends it to Curry. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fade away. Yes!
Bryant for the win. Bang!
James puts up the three.
Oh, it's good!
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in! 5/10 of a second remaining.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius, and we're going to cover a few topics today. I want to talk a little bit about why we should be rooting for a happy landing spot for DeAndre Ayton a little bit later, get into some of the offseason machinations, but today we start with a continuation of yesterday's pod, talking about Walker Kessler. We got some info today on a couple ends of things regarding Kessler, starting with Tim McMahon of ESPN reporting that Utah offered Kessler 5 years, $140 million, so $28 million a year. And not only did Kessler reject that, but his agents are looking for much more than that. And they were sort of offended by the offer, right? And, you know, this ties into what we were talking about yesterday, that usually restricted free agency is a bit of a waste of time. But if there's a pretty big gap between what the team wants to pay and what the player wants, and there's somewhat of a roster and money glut on Utah's roster, it doesn't compel them or coerce them that they have to make a move like that. But I do think it puts something into play. And I was wondering, D, what is your reaction to that? Because my first thought is, I think Kessler deserves probably a number that starts with a 3 rather than a 2, and that's market value for him. But curious what you think.
I think what you think. My first reaction when you sent me a text yesterday saying, like, this is the reporting 5 years, 140. If I were the Lakers, I'd be offering 4 years at 140 and, like, let's see what everyone's appetite for this sort of thing is. Now, the offer sheet stuff is complicated, and we touched on that a little bit in yesterday's pod, and so you can go review that. But my thought process is sort of exactly where it was yesterday. Restricted free agency favors the incumbent team because they hold all the leverage. And the timing of free agency gives them even more leverage. And the ability to match is the ultimate hammer in all negotiations. And if Utah just decides, no, we don't want to lose the asset for nothing, to have him walk for nothing, then we essentially have to match. And that's why the offer sheet pathway feels way less likely than the possibility of trying to generate a sign and trade
it's really more of the threat of an offer sheet, meaning that if the Lakers were able to offer 4 years, 140, and still have money left over like you laid out yesterday, even though Utah would be motivated to not lose the asset for nothing, I mean, they didn't want to pay him 30 a year. Do they really want to pay him 35? You can sort of put them in a position where it's like, we don't want to pay this guy this number anyway, and they're kind of offering us something in exchange for that, that maybe we could do some business.
Yeah, and I think that this is where negotiating gets hard, and this is where us being two guys talking on a podcast is not the same as Rob Pelinka talking to Austin Ainge or Danny Ainge or anyone else with the Utah Jazz organization. What we think is palatable may not be what someone else thinks is palatable. What we think is too little might not be too little to someone else. It's why back in the day at Forum Blue and Gold, we basically banned trade speculation, because all it turns into is me saying, well, they should take this and that's a fair deal, Pete. Why not?
Right. That's what something that I'm noticing more and more is watch how many reports around the league use the word believe or belief. Like, people around the league believe, like, the reality is that there's not a ton of information out there, but there's this massive appetite for it. So it leads to speculation and, well, what I think, and we're all gossiping, like all of us talk behind the scenes of like, well, this is what I'm hearing, this is what I think. And there's some stuff that you can go to air with and a lot of other stuff that isn't solid enough to not, but we all talk about it, right? And so it's, there's a certain amount of, you can reinforce the, well, I've heard this, and then two other people hear the same thing, and all of a sudden it's sort of assumed to be conventional wisdom when it's really all rooted in speculation in the first place.
It's informed speculation, and this is what these guys get paid for. Again, back in the day, I had an aggregator's list where I would say, if the six people who are on my aggregator's list reported something or said that this is what they're hearing, I would deem that worthy of writing about. If you were on my non-aggregators list, then I would actively like ignore you and be like, I don't care what you say, I'm never writing about it. And then there were the people who were on neither of those lists where I'm just like, huh, that's interesting, but I don't know enough. But my aggregators list was like Stein and Woj and David Aldridge and Shams and the people who broke news. And getting back to the Kessler stuff, the likelihood that any deal happens is low in the NBA. The number of discussions that teams have about players is so much more vast than even the thirstiest fan who reads every subreddit post on like what conversations that there's even more conversations than that happening. Some of it's casual, some of it advances to beyond casual, and then some of it turns serious very quickly at times. But in the big picture, the Lakers would be wise to suss this out as far as it could possibly go with this specific player. And that's sort of where I fall in the Kessler stuff, is he's on my priority free agent list. He's a guy that I think is such a good fit that the Lakers would be wise to say, we will generate the cap space we need to have in order to try to work something out with this specific player. And if that means going deep into conversations with the Jazz and Austin Ainge and Danny Ainge and saying, what would be palatable to you for something in return if we want to go to this number with a contract with him? And if they're just like, well, you have nothing that we want, then maybe let's get contentious then if we really want the player. But I have found in my long time of following the league, nothing's off limits if you've already taken my call.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah. If we're on the phone, then why'd you take my call if you weren't willing to have some sort of negotiation around this, or there wasn't something that you felt like I could offer you here?
But before the Lakers get too far down that road, I think they need to have a good alternative, at least in their pocket, as leverage, right? And this is where I start to get uncomfortable, because I don't have a great answer to this question. So I'm going to kick it to you first and ask you the uncomfortable question and put you on the spot. If it's not Kessler, who would be your number two guy that is available-ish? Like, I don't think Durin is gettable, for example. And maybe there is a similar gap between what Durin wants to make and what the Pistons want to offer. And, you know, that the same thing is possible. And I'm just wrong about that. But I take Durin off of the table in this discussion. Who would be the best alternative to Walker Kessler in your mind at the five spot?
I think it's a very interesting question, and I don't have the best answer for you. For example, I would look at a guy like Naz Reid. Remember the conversation that we had earlier in the summer, or the season was still happening or whatever, but it was the Lakers offseason because they'd already lost. And we were just like, okay, well, one of the angles that we think the Lakers are looking at is let's rattle off the number of teams that have a payroll crunch and who also feel like they may want to shake up their roster or do something. And are there players on those teams that you would want to potentially shake free or see what's possible in order to alleviate some of the payroll stuff that is out there? And Minnesota's trying to compete for a championship, but they're also very expensive, and they also need to shake up their roster. They just lost in the second round as well. Now, if I were them, I wouldn't be looking to trade Naz Reid, but that doesn't mean conversations aren't out there. And so I don't have a bunch of specific names for you, but I would look at those rosters where I'm just like, well, sure, they're expensive. I would also be thinking about what happens in the aftermath of any potential Giannis trade. Mm-hmm. Are there things that shake loose based off of the movement of multiple other players? And so there's still unknowns here.
Sure.
But if Miami gets Giannis and Khalil Ware is in that deal, and Milwaukee basically just holds on to Khalil Ware like into the offseason, he's a potential trade target as well, where the Lakers could easily pivot off of a Walker Kessler discussion and be like, okay, well, I'm just going to go pivot over here and look at this guy. Is he the same sort of player as Kessler? He's not, and he's a different pathway entirely. But I do think that there's things like that to still explore.
Let's go to break here. I want to talk about those two players.
Imagine you're watching the game at a buddy's house when you get a call that someone tried to break into yours. In a second, everything can change. That's why there's ADT. No one wants to feel unsafe in their own home. ADT security systems help keep your home safe with 24/7 monitoring. The ADT Plus app keeps you in control the whole time. ADT's network is built for those game time moments. They have the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry. Don't leave your home wide open during an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
Are you looking for a podcast about pro football that doesn't put you to sleep with an avalanche of analytics or insult your fandom with brainless hot takes? Well, hi. I'm Dan Hanzus.
And I'm Mark Sessler.
Oh, hi, Mark. And we're the hosts of Heed the Call, the NFL podcast you've been waiting your whole life for.
Heed the Call covers every game, every storyline, everything that matters, and we do it all with a touch of mirth.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Happy 250th birthday, America. I've decided to spend this semi-quincentennial as our founding fathers would have wanted me to, checking out the furniture America's waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, I know I can find everything from ultra-comfy power reclining sofas with genuine leather seats and stylish dining sets with convenient lift-top storage to best-selling bedrooms with over 700 five-star reviews and a feature-packed pop-up sleeper sofa with built-in shelving, charging storage, and those signature Bob-opedic seats. Because nothing is more American than a sofa that's a bed and a library and a closet. So, if you want to join me in decking out your house with the finest affordable furniture this 4th of July, why not stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
So, with Reid, I don't think Reid can be a starting five. I think if Reid's your starting five, is really on any team, but especially on a Luka and Austin team, that's a good way to give up 130 points on a regular basis. And I really like Naz. A great ball handler, great shooter, gives you the capacity to go five out. I just don't think he can be a starting five. Ware is interesting, but in his case, he's got, you know, a lot of the same motor questions that DeAndre Ayton has. And there's a certain amount of like, I like him as a talent, and I think he can grow into that if he matures a little bit and all of that. But is he ready to be the starting center in the Western Conference Finals? And you got to rely on that. I don't think he's there. And I certainly wouldn't want to sort of dig my heels in on that. And so like my list is like, Hartenstein, if there's any chance to get Gafford at the price that he's at, he'd be again, good for the price. Jared Allen, although I'd be a little bit surprised if they moved Allen, in that if you're building a team around Donovan Mitchell and James Harden, like, why would you trade your really good lob threat five? I understand that they have financial issues, but trading Jared Allen isn't the only way that they have to resolve those. And I think that they would go different routes first before that they would look to trade a guy who's actually really useful to them that helped get them to the conference finals. But then that's when you start getting into guys where I'm like, like, they're either really, really expensive. So Gobert, AD, Domantas Sabonis, which I'd have no interest in for a multitude of reasons. But
what do you think about Miles Turner?
Yeah, so that's why he's sort of my floor of like meh, but
yeah,
capable. And that might be where you land, right? Like, you could go five.
Yeah, Wendell Carter.
Yeah, Wendell Carter.
Revisiting some of those conversations.
But even there, like, he doesn't make that much. It looks like they're going to cut Jonathan Isaac and save some money there. I think there are ways to save money. It's a similar thing to the argument I just made on Jared Allen, in that they can save money elsewhere. And he's a useful player. He outplayed Jalen Duren in that first round for a lot of it. And so I just don't think that would be the guy they'd move to sort of alleviate their financial crunch. And so, again, looking at the center market, like, I like Eve Misi, for example, as a Khalil Ware-ish type of young player that I think could grow, and you'd be looking at like, oh, I'm really happy to have him on our books for the next several years, but do I think Misi's ready to be the starting five on the Western Conference finalist? No, I don't think that about him either. And I just keep going through all these names like, too expensive, too young, that guy's a backup, and all of that. And so I'm fascinated to see what the Lakers do with that five spot, because again, a lot of the options are not that great, which is part of the reason why I'm like, they should be very aggressive on Kessler.
You've been talking to me offline a fair amount about DeAndre Ayton and how you want to see the Lakers try to get Ayton to a place where he's useful and wanted and paid appropriately. I think you and I both agree Ayton outplayed his salary by a significant margin. I think you and I slightly disagree on what his market would be if he were to opt out. I think there's been some sense that he will opt out, which when I first heard that as a possibility, it sort of surprised me, honestly. But did you want to bring Ayton back into this conversation,
Pete? Not as the Lakers starting center next year, no. However, I have been wanting to make this argument for the last few pods, and we just haven't gotten around to it. So let me do that here, is that we should be rooting for DA to find a happy landing spot. And even if it's entirely self-interested, in that last year, you know, we were looking for guys that would sign for a very small amount of money in exchange for role and opportunity to rehabilitate their value so that they were able to get a decent contract somewhere else. And while he wasn't perfect, DA gave us competent starting center play that really held us over and helped us get to the second round of the playoffs before we saw where it fell off. And like you said, he probably outplayed his contract in ways that I want the Lakers to be able to make a credible argument for that in the future. I don't think this is the last time that the Lakers will be able to be like, hey, you know, we've got some minutes and some opportunity at this spot for a guy who, due to injury or whatever it is, they are not going to be paid what they're used to being paid. And you could put Marcus in this boat as well. We should be rooting for both of them, who both outplayed their contracts, to be rewarded for that, just so that the Lakers can in the future make a credible argument saying that if you come here and you outplay your contract, you're going to get rewarded for that somewhere. Now, I don't think DA played to a level where there's going to be a team pining to sign him to a four-year deal and build around him as their starting five going forward. But I do think the role he played for the Lakers this year is one that might be the next couple of years of his career. Of there are a lot of teams that just need competency at that spot, and a large human being that can do center things and set good screens. That as we are going through this list, D, there are a lot of guys that, you know, have flaws at that spot, and there's not a lot of like really high end players there. That just having somebody to hold you over for a year or two while you build other parts of your roster, I think, is super valuable. But again, from a Lakers perspective, I think it's in our best interest for guys who come here for less, get opportunity, play reasonably well relative to their contract, to get rewarded for that.
That's very well said, and I actually don't have a lot to add to that. Ayton's an interesting player, though. I felt that he showed that the OKC matchup specifically was too much of a challenge for him. I would have been very interested to see what it looked like in a different series with a different matchup. would have had more utility against the Spurs, for example. I thought he was a pretty good player against Houston. And I thought that for all the ups and downs he had during the regular season, that he was better for longer than what I think he's being given credit for.
Yeah. And while still understanding why Laker fans don't want him as the starting five for next year's team, right? Like, I get both perspectives there.
And bringing this back to the Kessler piece of things, or the center market in general, what I don't necessarily want for the Lakers is for them to back themselves into a corner with any specific player necessarily.
Yes.
But Kessler is the right sort of player to be like, well, I want to push my chips into the middle of the table to see if I can win a hand here. And again, I do think it would be in their best interest to engage the Jazz in a real way. Like, I know you like him, but we all know the realities of the books and everything. Are you open to this? And see where that gets you. And maybe it gets you nowhere. Maybe then you don't want to go through all of the gymnastics of an offer sheet and what that might look like and the timing of that. Like, I understand restricted free agency is fraught with all kinds of pitfalls that could bury you in real ways. I think the Lakers are potentially equipped, as I said in yesterday's pod, to sort of ride out some of those choppy waters and potentially come out of the other side with exactly what they want. But I understand potentially not having the stomach for that either. It's not so simple, you know?
Yes, absolutely. And so let's go to our second break here. Come back and keep it going.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
So Pete, I hinted at this earlier, but we were talking a little bit before the pod, and the draft is coming upon us very soon, and we would often want to be like, okay, well, who are the Lakers going to draft or whatever? But it's funny, like, the biggest news ahead of the draft isn't necessarily who's going to go number one or number two, even though that's a super intriguing story. But it's the Giannis deal that is hanging over the league in a way where the draft almost feels like an artificial deadline for the Giannis deal to get done. It's going to be a piece of what the Lakers' decision-making looks like. So I'd love to get your thoughts overall on just that idea.
Yeah, I think it's the biggest deal that will happen in the league over the course of this summer and is likely to involve multiple teams. Now, rewind back several months, you know, I was like, Lakers are way more in on Giannis than people realize. And that was very much the case. But as is often the case, the stars have a lot of leverage and a lot of say in these sorts of instances. And back then we were talking about Minnesota and Golden State and the Knicks. And the Knicks falling off of that talk after winning the championship makes sense. But it's crazy how it's really come down to all you're hearing is Boston and Miami, and especially Miami. There is a certain amount of reinforcement in repeating all of that. We'll see what actually happens. We've seen a few times where, for example, when Milwaukee traded for Damian Lillard, they kind of came out of nowhere at the last moment when he was expected to be Miami. So we've got to see where he actually lands. But the most reported thing with regards to the Giannis situation is that he wants to stay on the East Coast. And if that's the case, then the Lakers and Golden State, they're not in a position to be like, ah, well, yeah, you don't want to be here, but we're still going to trade all our picks and try to convince you and keep you. That would be crazy. And so it's much smarter for them to move on to the next option if Giannis isn't interested in LA. But as I'd said back then, I thought it was likelier that the Lakers would be a third team on that trade. I am a little cooler on that now if it's Miami. Like, you could probably get Tyler Hero right now for a song. That's a lot of the reporting that we were getting. And that was the premise, right? Is that the Lakers have a lot of cap space. Milwaukee doesn't have much use for veteran players making $30 million. And Hero's a good player, but like, what are they going to do with him? They don't really want Jovic, who's on an extension, paying him $15 million a year over 4 years. They're in a rebuilding type of scenario if they're looking to move him. Or they'd want, you know, a Jaylen Brown or like a really high-end player that they could then move to somebody else if they wanted. And so when looking at Miami, and there's nothing really in that that I'm all that interested in. And so I think the Lakers could absolutely get Tyler Hero if they wanted. Like, do you have any interest in him? We were talking about shooting forwards and guys like Markkanen, and Hero's a movement shooter. He's just 6'6", 6'5", right? And more of a guard. I'm not that interested on a team that starts with Luka and Austin, but he does provide a similar skill set. So that's sort of where I'm at on that deal. But I do think that the Giannis deal is a domino that will impact other deals and where a lot of other teams go. So I do think that that kind of needs to happen first for some other business to happen.
Yeah, so to answer your Hero question, I have no interest in Tyler Hero. I think he's a good enough player to help a winning team in real ways. His long-term best suited spot might be as a sixth man on a really good team where he can close some games, but also just be that guy who goes and gets buckets for you.
I think he'd be great on a team that had a lot of defense but needed a boost of offense. Like, Detroit stands out to me like crazy as a great landing spot. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great idea. But I like the smaller pieces that would be coming from Miami potentially in a deal. So I like Ware. I know that you mentioned that some of the motor concerns. I also know that he's butted heads with Eric Spoelstra a little bit, and that Spoelstra has essentially moved him in and out of the rotations for whatever reason that Spoelstra saw fit. And I'm going to default to Eric Spoelstra a lot of times as like a guy who knows what he's doing and knows what he wants from a player. You know what I mean?
I totally do. Like, is Khalil Ware a talented 23-year-old or however old he is who could really be a good player going forward? Yes, yes, and yes. But again, that's the standard to me, is could I picture you as our starting five going through thick and thin in the Western Conference Finals? I don't want to rely on a kid to do that unless I really, really believe in them. And if you're starting from a place where, like, you piss Eric Spoelstra off and you come with all of these motor concerns, it's not the guy I want to lock in at that spot.
I get it. I will also say, though, that I don't know how excited you were about the Mark Williams trade, but they were just about to trade for a guy who played for a bad team, who had injury issues and challenges, but had all of the tools, and the prospect of him playing next to Luka and Austin and LeBron was just like, this guy can help us.
And on a rookie contract, which is huge in the context of building a team. Ware makes peanuts.
He makes like $5 million a year or something like that. And so that has value to me as well. The one that got away, Jaime Jaquez, is also potentially going to be a guy that would be in any Miami deal. And I like Jaquez as well as like a rangy forward with downhill ability, knows how to play, good connecting player, competes on defense, has good size, good enough athlete. Like, he checks a lot of boxes for the sort of player that I would like as well. And so these aren't difference-making players within the context of this guy's going to start for us and be a high-level productive player. But NBA championship teams are littered with like role player guys who know exactly what their jobs are, who are going to go out there and compete and play hard and just sort of do the thing that they're asked to do, be in the right spot, like be coachable and all of that. And so Hawkins is another guy where I'd be like, okay, I know you're going to be extension eligible soon, but you also make peanuts right now. Like, I'm all for getting role players feet that can compete and play hard.
Yeah, please don't get me wrong. I would be thrilled if we got either Khalil Ware or Hawkins, so long as they were not relied on to be the closing five type of player. But the team control is part of the reason why I'm like, why would Milwaukee not just take them in the deal? Like, that was my rationale of, it's really the veteran that's making money that Milwaukee doesn't have much use for. But guys like Ware and Jaquez, I think that's exactly the type of player that they should be trading for, provided that they like them.
That is true. This is where I go back to some of the stuff I was saying about Utah and Kessler, right? Which is like, if you're going to make a trade, you have to entice the other team. If the Lakers want in, what are they willing to give up for Khalil Ware and Jaime Jaquez? Are they willing to give up a first round pick that's unprotected or whatever? Like, not for Jaquez specifically, but for Ware potentially.
Sure, potentially. Like, but like, see, for me, if we're trading a first, I want a starter, right? Like, because we've only got three of them to trade. It's not that Ware is not in a vacuum worth, if you could get a cost controlled five that barely makes any money, yeah, but we traded a first for Mark Williams, right? But it's more about like, we've only got a couple of those to trade, and we've got other needs that I view. So I'd rather like save that for guys that I know are going to be in the closing five.
I think that that's totally fair. And to your larger point that you were making earlier about, like, specifically what could shake free from Miami, it's less enticing than what it was 2 months ago, where it was just like, I wonder what could shake free from the Knicks.
Yeah, or right? Like McDaniels from Minnesota or something. Minnesota's in and on it. Like, heck yeah, let's get in on that. And that's part of the reason why I think it's less likely, because of Laker interest rather than the other way around.
And this is where I think that a potential Boston deal is actually one where I wouldn't mind the Lakers sort of living in the aftershocks of that sort of trade to see, like, okay, well, it would very likely be a three-team deal because Milwaukee has about as much use for Jaylen Brown as they did for a disgruntled Giannis. But if Brown were to go to Portland, or Brown were to go, like, can you then start to be like, okay, well, can we get in on that sort of deal where it's just like, what's shaking free from Portland? To put a button on this point especially, I'm always looking for another quality player that the Lakers could get for whatever price they're willing to pay in the marketplace that makes sense to them. And if Milwaukee doesn't want to be a way station for good player X that is coming from Portland, then can the Lakers play a part in this? And this is where, even if they're not one of the teams that is on the fringes of a Giannis trade, the possibility of there being ripple effects that go through way more teams than the two or three teams that might be involved initially is something that I do think is going to matter for the Lakers, or that they could potentially keep their eye on to say, can we get in on this or play a part within that?
Absolutely. And I'm super curious to see how it actually resolves, in that there's such little information really outside of Miami and these occasional whispers about Boston. But even then, a lot of the Boston folks have thrown some cold water on that. So if it's not Miami and he lands somewhere else, like, it'll be without a lot of reporting and backing of that. D, you've been talking about how this Giannis situation should on paper resolve before the draft. The draft's in 6 days. Draft does not feel like it's in 6 days. I can't believe we're this close.
We were talking about this the other day, right? But the way that the NBA calendar works, where it's just like you come off the high of the finals and you sort of get to bask in the celebration of whatever team wins and sort of the good vibes that are going around.
Mikal Bridges going on IG Live, going nuts.
And acting like he's crying about an Austin Reeves side jersey and then calling him a bucket. It just being very fun. All of that stuff happens, and then boom, it's time for the draft, right? So I would actually encourage people to go back and listen to the two-part draft pod that you did with Mike Garcia and sort of listen to prospects that are in that range. It's not a guarantee the Lakers use that pick to select a player, but it's very possible, Pete, that they do select a guy there that mm-hmm. is going to be potentially on the team for a long time. And so this is an exciting period for the Lakers, not just because there could be an earth-shattering trade or whatever that reshapes the league, but the Lakers are very much in the mix just to be like, okay, well, let's draft a young guy who could potentially improve the team. And that's coming up soon.
It is. And I can't wait to see how that all shakes out. And would love to talk to Mike one more time too, right before the draft, which again is on Tuesday. But we'll wrap up here. We'll come back tomorrow. I want to talk a little bit more about sort of the depth and the pursuit of depth. We've looked more at the high-end type of players, D, but I want to talk about that idea and the potential to sort of improve the, I don't know, 5 through 10 on the roster of this team. And we'll do that a little bit tomorrow, but until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn his double team. This pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires, it's good, and the Lakers win the game! The Lakers win the game! Rebound to Lonnie, 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way, good!
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to 5.
Bryant.
Yeah. And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Odyssey celebrates Father's Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.